This is Keeping the Faith, a weekly discussion about issues of faith, spirituality, religion, and ethics. Now here's your host, Steve Shoemaker.
Our guest today is Reverend Rob Kirby, who's the campus minister at Wesley Foundation. In fact, the first Wesley Foundation ever. Tell us what a Wesley Foundation is, Rob.
And we're very proud of that. A Wesley Foundation is a United Methodist ministry serving a state campus. And about 97 years ago, I think it is now, maybe 98, we were formed on this campus. We grew out of a couple of local United Methodist churches that just realized that they couldn't sustain ministry to a student population of this size. And it was rather novel at the time. Of course, nowadays there are all kinds of campus ministries that serve this university. Our Wesley Foundation does all kinds of activities. We have some things for undergraduates, some things particularly focused towards graduate students, also for young married folk, as well as professors and spouses. We have a real active international ministry as well, and we're blessed to be a part of this community.
Now, Wesley Foundation and Wesley United Methodist Church are very prominent here at the University of Illinois. You have the tallest steeple, for one thing.
We actually look down on Illini Union, one of the only churches, I think, that can claim to do that. We're right next door, one block east of there on Green Street. And the story behind the tower actually is interesting. They were trying to decide how tall to make it, and they made it 1 foot shorter then they would need to put a red blinking light on top of it.
So you had room for a cross, but not a not you didn't have to have a red blinking light.
Exactly.
Now, since you've been on this campus for almost 100 years, tell us how large an operation is it? How many pastors are there? Dr. Howard White's been the senior pastor for how long now?
4 years. Actually, Dr. White and I came at the same time 4 years ago. We're both starting our fifth year now. We're blessed to have a number of people who help us in many different ways. In my corner of the ministry, I'm responsible for programming towards and for and with college students. My true workers are my other students, my student volunteers. I have a handful of student peer ministers who, in a lot of ways, do the best ministry with and through their peers. But we also have a handful of paid staff who help out in numerous ways. Our director, Dr. White, is a half-time director of our Wesley Foundation and half-time senior pastor of Wesley United Methodist Church that meets inside of the Wesley building. Then we have a number of support staff, secretaries, and some business administration folks, so that I don't have to worry about counting all the nickels and dimes that add up to a great deal that really keep us going in many different ways.
Now, you're also president of the Religious Workers Association on the campus of the University of Illinois. You've just been elected for another second term. Is that typical of Wesley Foundation campus ministers that you'd be involved in an interfaith and ecumenical enterprise like that?
I would hope so. I know on this campus we have a long tradition of having very active members at the RWA. I don't know. Some of it's kind of in our genes, I think, as United Methodist, because we're pretty broad in terms of what we believe. We're a non-creedal church, which means you don't have to profess to a certain set of beliefs to be a United Methodist. So we have a pretty broad umbrella, which means even to actively work well within the United Methodist system, you have to learn to talk across some of those differences and agree to disagree on some points. So I would suspect that most United Methodist ministries are fairly involved both in ecumenical as well as interfaith groups.
Now, I know that that's a particular interest of yours personally. How did you come to be interested in working with people of other religious backgrounds and traditions?
I was very blessed in a number of ways growing up, but one was being raised in a very diverse culture. I was actually raised in Geneva, Switzerland, and went to an international school there, and literally had friends from around the world. It was the school that most of the United Nations children went to. So anything that happened on the world scene played out on our school. And sometimes that was good, and sometimes that was kind of challenging, to say the least. But was very blessed to continually be interacting with other persons.
Now, how did you happen to be raised in Geneva, Switzerland?
My father worked for a big multinational company, Caterpillar, a tractor company, and that was one of their headquarters for Europe and Africa. So I was there for 6 years, some of my very formative years. Moved back during my high school years here. But have fond memories of a lot of things, one of which was Boy Scouts of America was active there, but less than half of our participants at the school were American. And I remember many a campfire sitting around with persons from all kinds of faith backgrounds and learning how to talk and learning how to share and how to listen in the midst of that. One of my good friends was Moham, and we went around and around on all kinds of issues. So I guess that kind of got into my blood, and I continue to be very interested in international things as well as interfaith activities.
Now, did you grow up United Methodist?
No, did not, actually. We kind of bounced around a couple times. When we moved to Geneva, there were only two or three English-speaking churches there, so our choices were rather limited, and we fit most closely with the Anglican Church, the Anglican/Episcopal Church there, so it was actually confirmed in that tradition. I don't know, some of my interest in liturgy may root back to those years, I'm not sure. And then after that, when we moved back to America, became involved with the United Methodist Church that just welcomed me into their midst with open arms, and was very blessed. They helped my transition back to America, and I think that's part of the reason I have a real passion in helping welcome other persons, other cultures into our American culture.
Or was that Methodist church that welcomed you?
That was Peoria First United Methodist.
So. Headquarters of Caterpillar.
You connected the dots.
Right. So you came back as a high school student after 6 years in Switzerland. What surprised you about the U.S. Schools and culture when you came back from that international setting where you're aware of what's going on all around the world because of the U.N. activities there in Geneva?
I found I was fairly well versed on world news, surprisingly so, on world politics probably for my age, but knew very little bit about America. And in many ways that was challenging because as I went into my classes, I didn't know American history. I didn't know American grammar. I knew some English grammar, similar but not the same. And, you know, for all those years I kept on, I was a super patriot over there, was very proud of being an American, and realized I didn't know as much about America as most folk. So felt very lost when I first came back.
What about teen culture? Did you know the music?
No, I didn't. And I don't know if some of that was Geneva or if some of that was simply still today, I don't have a whole lot of interest in that particular vein, but in sports would be another example. You know, I knew a little bit about soccer and had played on a basketball team, but when I moved home, there's a whole new different level of understanding of some of the sports here. And, of course, movies and all those things that teens define themselves around was rather novel to me. So that was probably a big piece of me feeling lost. But like I said, there at the church was embraced by a community that not only could look past some of those differences, but could appreciate them. And, so that still speaks to me.
What about cars and girls? You probably couldn't drive a car in Geneva.
Moved back just before that, actually. Okay. Moved back 14, maybe 15 years old.
I see.
A teenager learns about cars and girls pretty quick, I think.
When it came time for college, did you choose – where did you go?
I followed my dad to Purdue followed my dad into engineering. I was good at math and science, and well, if you're good at math and science, you should be an engineer. And obviously, we have a good engineering school here at the University of Illinois, but that wasn't my family heritage. And got there and was still very good at math and science, but my heart wasn't alive. And after about a year there, I realized that just because you're good at something doesn't mean you should be doing it, that maybe your heart desires other things. And for me, it was the liberal arts and an interest in religion and faith. And after a year, I transferred to the University of Evansville, which is actually a small United Methodist college at the southern tip of Indiana. And did my last 3 years there, and just absolutely loved my experience there. It was good on a number of fronts. So one, they were very internationally involved, got a chance to study overseas while I was there. Spent a semester in Grantham, England, at a little college called Harlaxton College. And I didn't study real hard there, I must admit. I think I had classes on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, and sometimes I made it to those classes.
A 4 or perhaps 5 day weekend off.
Yeah, had a really good time, and of course was on a college budget, so I had to find cheap ways to travel, but use that as a base to see part of that world over there.
In those years, could you safely backpack and in and around England and Europe?
I didn't know any better, so definitely did. Actually, I hitchhiked all throughout the British Isles, lots of people I met thought I was crazy. I didn't tell my parents about that until after the fact.
Stayed in youth hostels?
Lots of youth hostels. I actually carried a tent, so lots of tents. I did some things that probably would be unwise in today's culture, probably wasn't that wise there, but, you know, I would get offers to spend the night at people's homes when I'd hitchhike with them, and did that on some occasions when I felt like they were very genuine and sincere people. So I also got to see a little bit more than the touristy things when I was doing that.
And when you came back to the University of Evansville, after you graduated, did you go immediately to seminary? Did you make that choice to be a pastor at that point, or was that a later thing in your life?
Like many mainline Protestant traditions, we believe in a call that somehow God speaks to your heart and kind of tugs you towards ministry or invites you towards ministry. We believe that everyone's invited to ministry, but some of us get invited to ordained ministry that has been blessed and ordained by the church. I began to get inklings of that way back in Peoria. And it was probably a piece of why I left Purdue. But even as I was graduating Evansville, I still wasn't ready to make that commitment, was looking at counseling real seriously. I had fallen in love with a beautiful young woman, and she had a couple more years of college. So I figured I had a couple more years to figure out what I wanted to do. Moved out to Colorado Springs. And hiked, camped, skied, and worked a little. Spent 2 years out there doing that. Was very blessed during those years in a number of ways.
What kind of work did you do?
I worked at a children's home, a place called Cleo Wallace Center. I was a mental health worker, which meant I worked at a home for children with behavioral problems of various kinds, oftentimes children who'd been in and out of the court system, usually somehow been in a situation where they couldn't maintain foster care, and was just kind of a some facilities might call it a house parent or something like that. I actually lived on the dorm with them a number of hours a week and just kind of helped them in their daily lives and transition, and, of course, lots of behavioral modification. did enjoy that. It began to answer my question about whether I wanted to do counseling full time, which for me was no. Did enjoy interacting with people on that level, but also God kept on speaking to me. I kept on getting inklings that maybe I should head towards ordained ministry.
Now, when people hear a phrase like that, God kept on speaking to me, you talk about hearing voices?
Yeah, they're all going to call me crazy now, aren't they? No, not really. Real early on, I had a dream that I would almost consider a voice of God that spoke to me in a dream. That was all the way back in high school. For me, it was weird coincidences, emptiness in my heart. Some of those coincidences, everyone says they look younger than they are. I make that claim as well. At the time, I was just out of college and was walking down a street, and a complete stranger came up to me and looked me in the eye and said, "You're a minister, aren't you?" No, I'm not, and kind of walked on down the street. And sometimes I wonder if that might have been either a God moment or at least a moment where I said, well, maybe I can be a minister. And I still claim that one of the reasons I'm in ministry now is an atheist friend of mine. We had climbed up to the top of Pikes Peak in Colorado, and we're looking out on all that lay below us. And I can remember us talking. I was sharing with him a little bit about my ponderings about going into ordained ministry. And I can remember him saying, you know, I don't buy any of this God stuff that you keep talking about. But if there were ever someone who could convince me of it, it's not the pastors I have known, but it's someone like you. And I guess that was the final straw for me, where I said, okay, God, I'll go off to seminary and do the studies. And then continued to have it confirmed, and finally was ordained in 98.
We're talking on Keeping the Faith this week with Reverend Rob Kirby, who is the campus minister and associate director of the Wesley Foundation, the United Methodist Campus Ministry here at the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign. And Rob is also the current president for a second-year term of the Religious Workers Association, the interfaith religious organization here at the university. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm a Presbyterian pastor, but currently director of the University YMCA here on this campus. And I've also been a participant in the RWA for many years, and have found it a very, very interesting place to meet people from other religious traditions. We're talking with Rob, and if people have questions or comments about anything we talk about during this hour, do give us a call. The numbers in Champaign-Urbana, the lines can be found by punching in 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. If it's a long-distance call for a listener, even people who are listening via the Internet, do call us toll-free, 1-800-222-9455. Rob, you were at University of Evansville. You graduated. You still had a girlfriend there for a couple more years. You were off in Colorado Springs. Did you find ways to get back to Evansville regularly, or did you just have a large phone bill?
Probably both. For part of my time at the children's home, I was actually working a graveyard shift, and I worked 4 10-hour nights, which meant I had 4 days off. So I had an 8-day week. And I can remember working all night and hopping in my car and driving all the way to Indiana, pretty much nonstop. And arriving there and looking forward to spending time with my fiance, and then promptly falling asleep for a number of hours. Getting about a day of quality time there, and then turning around and doing the long drive back and driving into Colorado Springs and going straight to another graveyard shift at work, and did that a lot of times, a number of times, and could almost keep it up at that age. But then finally, my fiance started saying, you know, you're always sleepy when you're visiting. So we found Wichita, Kansas, which is about halfway between us. We met at a state park there and found that we had more fruitful time when neither of us were quite as tired. So
did you get married before you went to seminary?
Yep, immediately before. Got married out in Kalispell, Montana, where her family originally is from, and honeymooned out in Vancouver, and then drove across the country to Boston, where I went to Boston University. That's where I did my seminary, got my Master's of Divinity there, did a specialization in pastoral care and counseling with that. But thoroughly enjoyed my time there, and very glad that I had those years there, and they have led me here.
What were the surprises during your seminary years? Many people who have a strong faith background when they go to a seminary, whether it's Jewish or Christian or whatever, are often find a kind of a shocking experience. Was that true for you?
I don't know about shocking. It was eye-opening for me. I think I was prepared for it on some levels. I found different ways of reading the Bible very enlightening, different ways to understand Scripture and understand the faith community. For me, my faith came alive there. For me, when I could finally move beyond some of the Sunday school answers and get a little deeper appreciation for the faith tradition, for the psychology, for the philosophy. For me, it just made my faith that much richer and that much more meaningful. It kind of brought it from a something that interested me but was still a little stale to something that's very alive and very dynamic in my life now.
Was your first call out of seminary to a parish a solo pastor, or were you associate somewhere before you came to Wesley?
Yeah, during seminary out in Boston for 3 years, I was a youth minister, an assistant to the minister out there. And then after that, in our Methodist tradition, the bishop appoints us. She chose to appoint me to the Quad Cities, to two churches. One was a suburb church that had kind of maintained a membership between 80 and 120. And just wasn't thriving, but not doing poorly. It was serving well, those people. So I was serving as their religious leader for a few years. At the same time, I was also, I think they listed me a quarter-time youth minister or associate minister at a downtown church, Moline First United Methodist. And during my time there, we started doing more and more together between those two churches. And after about 3 years, the churches made the decision that they should merge. They formed a new church called Riverside United Methodist Church. And they're still doing very well out there.
And then you came from Moline directly to Wesley Foundation?
Correct. And again, the bishop played an important role in that movement for me. Although I will admit I had been starting to voice my interest to work in a college setting, my desire to work with college students. So it wasn't a huge surprise, but a very welcome appointment for me.
Now, when you came to Wesley, how had the student life changed from when you were yourself a college student, an undergrad? What did you notice were the differences?
That's a tough one to answer. when I was at the University of Evansville, the dynamics of college life can be a lot different at a small liberal arts school. So some of those comparisons are hard to make. In terms of the students themselves, there definitely were some changes. I think they're, my experience of students today is an openness to others that probably exceeds when I was there, an openness to other ideas and other traditions. I think some of that may come from some of the move towards postmodernity in the last few years, a sense that you can hold your truth, but that doesn't deny someone else's truth. I've experienced that in my students, and I'm excited by that. I'm excited by it seems like more of a willingness to serve in terms of spring break mission trips that are just blossoming on this campus and literally across the nation. A real openness to get active and serve and to help. I don't know. I think at the same time there may be a little bit of reluctance to engage towards social action quite so much. At least that's been my experience, that very interested in, you know, what can I do to help someone else, to be with someone, to help someone and be helped in that process. But sometimes a frustration in terms of changing the system. You know, the system's too monolithic to be able to really make a change. So while there may be an increase in terms of service, it takes a lot of baiting to get some of the students interested in social action.
When you work with students, how do you decide what kind of service opportunities that it would be good for the Wesley Foundation to help organize for, to provide these kind of chances for students?
I'm always open to ideas. And we have some old timers there at the foundation who are more than welcome to make suggestions. We have students who make suggestions. I make my fair share of suggestions. And then we take it to our student council and we let the student council make those decisions. And in my mind, they've made a lot of good decisions. We are blessed to participate in a food pantry. We have a number of students engaged in various tutoring systems throughout the community here. We do a major mission trip every year. This year we went to Zimbabwe. We went to Africa University. In years past, we've gone to New Orleans and Lake Charles. We've gone to Rockford. We've gone to a couple other places. I'm blanking on them. This coming year, we're hoping to go to Appalachian Mountains, do an Appalachian Service Project mission trip. We usually go in January. We find that for many of our students, they enjoy getting away from their families, some during a very long Christmas break. I don't know if that's true, but at least they're able to spend time with family as well as do a mission trip, whereas for spring break, it tends to be, it eats up the entire spring break if you do much of a mission trip.
Now, did you go to Zimbabwe yourself?
Yes, I did. We took myself and seven students went to Africa University. It's a United Methodist university over there. Our first United Methodist University on the continent of Africa. And just kind of did some odds and ends there. Spent a lot of time at a United Methodist orphanage. Got to meet and live with a number of Zimbabwean folk, as well as people from all throughout Africa who were attending the university there. It's been particularly challenging as things continue to spiral there, particularly in terms of the economy and the inflation rate there, and I'm very concerned about what's going on. And now have a bunch of students who are very concerned about that as well, who probably it wouldn't have hit their radar screen if they had not been over there and experienced that.
Where does the money come from to support seven students and a campus pastor to go to Zimbabwe on that kind of a service trip?
Money grows on trees. You just have to find the right trees. Not totally true. We asked anyone who might be interested in helping us, and that included a number of places where we got some grant money, which helped us get started. And then also, we have a healthy alumni list. One of the advantages to being around for almost 100 years is we've had a lot of people go through here, so we wrote them letters inviting them to support us. We wrote local churches. We approached the churches that meet there in our Wesley Foundation. And people stepped up to the plate. The students also asked their local churches in their hometowns, which really broadened our base of people to ask. And the money came more easily than I feared. I was afraid that we'd be stressing over it the whole time and it'd be this dark cloud over our heads the whole time. But fairly early on saw that we were on a good trajectory to raise the funds to get us there. And then in return, we shared our story with those people who helped finance us, both the individuals as well as the churches.
I want to talk about one of the byproducts that comes from that kind of experience internationally, which is the kind of leadership development among the students that happens. But before we get to that, let me take a quick break because we're about halfway through Keeping the Faith this afternoon. Our guest is Rob Kirby. Let me say a couple more words about him for those who may have tuned in late. Rob is the current president of the Religious Workers Association here at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. He is a United Methodist campus minister at the Wesley Foundation, the very first Wesley Foundation anywhere in the world, started here at this university. He's also the associate director there with Dr. Howard White, who has been director for the last 4 years. This Wesley Foundation is about 100 years old, coming up in a couple of years to that milestone. And so it has quite a history here on this campus and has been a model for campus ministries at state universities around the world, really. And Rob is the current campus minister, has been sharing with us today some of the programs that he's been involved with, as well as his own personal history. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the usual host for these Keeping the Faith programs. I've been gone for the last 3 weeks myself, traveling with my spouse internationally. And I do want to thank Don Nolan for filling in so ably for me when I was out of the country. And to the guests that we've had the last 3 weeks. And, of course, to our technical director, Brett Polson, for helping keep this show on the road. On the air. I might just mention that when I was coming back from Turkey for this visit that was sponsored by the Intercultural Friendship Foundation here at the University of Illinois, along with people in Turkey for an interfaith group that went to Turkey for a week, 8 days really. But it was a marvelous experience, and for those who would like to learn more about the Intercultural Friendship Foundation. They can go to the archives here at WILL.UIUC.edu and hear an interview that I did with some of the local leaders of that group about that group of Muslims on this campus who are very interested in interfaith dialogue and communication and who sponsored this trip for several people from here at the University of Illinois. To have an experience in a Muslim country that is, in some ways, different from other Muslim countries. So it was a fascinating experience for me and for the others from the University of Illinois who were on that trip. We did pay our own way over and back, but once we were there, we were guests of the Muslims in Turkey who not only gave us a great educational tour, but welcomed us into their homes where we were able to have meals with them and talk informally with them about many different interfaith, important interfaith issues. So just a quick word of thanks to the Intercultural Friendship Foundation here at the University of Illinois. And I might just mention that we were coming back from that, and I happened to pick up a People magazine, which I tend to only read when I'm flying long flights. But it had a four-page story on one of our guests from last April here on Keeping the Faith, Billy and Kimberly Campbell, who were talking about green burial. And they're a couple from South Carolina. There's an interesting article about them in the current People magazine. But that just shows you get on Keeping the Faith and you'll soon be in People, Rob.
Oh, no.
Okay. But that it is an interesting story. And they, for those who missed that interview, again, go to the archives online, www.bill.uiuc.edu, and then go to AM 580 and then Keeping the Faith, and you'll see a list of those programs. And the Campbells were talking about environmentally friendly burial practices. And it's, it may sound like an odd topic, but it's quite interesting. Another of the programs that we played an archive program when I was gone earlier in June, and interestingly, Matt Bolton, who was on that program about music, contemporary Christian music, has now received a new position since we interviewed him. He's now on the faculty of Harvard Divinity School. So happy to share that news about one of our former guests on Keeping the Faith. But let's get back to our current guest. We're talking about campus ministry, and we're talking about the Religious Workers Association here on campus, as well as the Wesley Foundation, with Rob Kirby, president of RWA and campus minister at Wesley. Tell us about RWA. What does it do?
Thank you. We are the voluntary association of religious leaders that serve the University of Illinois. And we do a lot, but in terms of people who are involved with this, the most immediate thing that they'll know is that we keep them in the loop in terms of emails about interfaith activities that are happening on campus. We meet once a month, always on the second Thursday at about 8:30 in the morning. We rotate where we meet. We meet at different campus ministries and churches here in the immediate community. And then we'll usually have some sort of guest speaker at those, often someone from the university or someone else that we think will speak to an issue that is of particular interest to people serving this campus in terms of faith issues.
Now, Rob, let me interrupt just to make clear. Are these people paid by the university, who are the religious leaders who are part of this organization?
You're beginning to sound like some of my international students who ask that question. No, we have a separation of church and state, so we don't see a lot of that. So, no, actually all the persons who are active in the RWA are paid by their ministries and associate with that group because we realize the importance of that. Having said that, we are we interface well with the community. We are the one of the very important voices that the university works through on faith issues. The university folk who come are on university time. They realize that a lot of what we do extends some of what they do. For example, we will usually have a guest from the counseling center who will speak about the most pressing issues that the counseling center is seeing. And then we're able as faith communities to respond to that and assist in that, both in terms of with our own students directing them towards resources, but also providing some of those resources in our own ministries. I believe the first full meeting we will have this fall, we are going to have a representative from the Dean of Students Office who will be speaking to us, sharing with us a little bit about the demographics of incoming students so we have a better sense of who is coming to our campus community, and in turn that helps shape how we can minister to them and to the larger campus community.
How broadly representative is RWA of the tremendous range of people who come to this university from all over the world in terms of their religious interests and commitments?
I would say fairly broad, but not nearly broad enough. I think at last count we had about 40 different traditions that were joining us. Pretty much all of the major faith traditions have some connection with us. We do have a real active Christian group, a real active Jewish community. The Muslim community is fairly active with us, as well as all kinds of others, various shades of Christian groups, a lot of the smaller faith traditions that may not show up on the world religions books, but clearly have students here and have a message and a faith that they're interested in practicing here on this community. So we're blessed with that.
Can you give me an example? Give us some examples of some of the groups that are active on this campus.
Certainly. We just printed out our directory for this next year. It's available at our Wesley Foundation. We'll be after we get through the registration tables, it'll be available in other places on campus as well. But it includes the Baha'is have been very active in the past, various Baptist churches, several from various flavors of evangelical churches. We've blessed to have a lot of the mainline, if not most of the mainline traditions participating with us, Reformed traditions, a lot of the interfaith groups or the ecumenical groups or interdenominational groups. We have at least three different Jewish organizations who participate very actively. We have a couple of Catholic groups, including the Newman Foundation, but some other folk as well. Your YMCA is very active with us. The Church of Latter-day Saints has been active in recent years. The Central Illinois Mosque and Islamic Center, Covenant Fellowships, and
Orthodox Christians.
Yes, Orthodox Christians, Orthodox Jews, all kinds of folk. I could read down through the whole list, but it would take a while.
And people can find it online?
Yeah, actually, it is online. We currently are hosted on the Office of Dean of Students, so that'd be www.odosuiuc.edu and then /RWA. And we haven't updated our most recent members and our most recent board. That will be happening hopefully here in the next coming weeks. We want to kind of get into the summer and figure out who we are next year as we move forward.
And if there are any listeners who are part of groups that might be curious about how to become a part of the Religious Workers Association here on this campus, they could contact you how?
We actually just got a new email. We can be found at rwauiuc@gmail.com. And I wouldn't mind actually kind of reading down some of our purposes, if that's all right.
Sure. Let me also give the telephone number if people don't have access to the computers. I realize that's very few, but just in case, 217-344-1120 would reach Wesley Foundation for you, right?
Correct.
Great.
Anyway, our stated purposes that we come together and form around. One is to stimulate among our members a vigorous, cordial, and meaningful discussion of relevant religious issues and concerns. Some of that happens in those meetings. My experience is more often than not, it happens from relationships that spring from our monthly meetings. We also are there to represent and express the professional concerns of the religious workers at the University of Illinois. Sometimes we'll have a concern that we may want to lift up to the university. We are an official means to do that. We also exist to establish and maintain channels of communications and structures for cooperation with the university and all of its appropriate offices for students, faculty, and administration. We exist to provide a channel for constructively critical voice on matters related to social and higher educational issues. We exist to explore opportunities and develop approaches for the relevant expression and the effectual practice of religion in the life at the university. We exist to serve as an agency for the initiation, sponsorship, coordination, and or implementation of programs and projects on behalf of the religious workers at the university. And we exist to provide an agency for unified expression and action by the RWA without violating or sacrificing the diversity of the particular religious convictions and commitments of our members. And finally, and perhaps most importantly, is simply to learn about, appreciate, and respect other religious traditions.
If listeners Keeping the Faith today have questions that you'd like to ask our guest, Rob Kirby, do give us a call. This is a live program, and you may call if you're listening anywhere where it's a long-distance call, toll-free. The number is 1-800-222-9455. That's 1-800-222-WILL. In Champaign-Urbana, there are several lines that you can reach by punching in 333-9455, 333-WILL. In Champaign-Urbana, if it's a local call for you. We are happy, indeed eager, to have others ask questions besides me to our guest, Reverend Kirby. Rob, when the RWA has disagreements, now this is a statement of purpose that a committee I'm sure came up with and wrote and the group voted to approve it. But there are differences of opinions about how best to respond. And when you have this diverse of a group with people from all over the world and different ideas and backgrounds and traditions, how do you deal with those? Is it majority rules? How does the group operate if you decide to do something cooperatively?
I would say the heart of it's relationship. You know, technically, I think we operate under Robert's rules. Rarely do we use those. Once we've built relationship with each other, both through meetings and informal gatherings, it really makes a lot of that a lot easier. There's a couple trains of thought in terms of directions you can go with interfaith organizations. One is find those things that absolutely everybody agrees on. And, you know, create an interfaith service where prayers are not spoken from any particular tradition. At times, we've probably operated that way. My personal preference is operating out of appreciation towards each other's traditions, as well as our beliefs and our commitments on various issues. I like to see an interfaith gathering where people pray from their tradition. They name their tradition, and then hopefully we have a number of different prayers from different traditions, and we learn to appreciate and respect each other's. On occasions, we do make decisions that not everyone agrees on. I try and keep those to a minimum, but we do make those decisions. Unless there's an overwhelming majority, if it's a hairline vote, as president, I'd probably find another way to work around it. But if there's a pretty strong leaning one way or the other, I'm not afraid to try and push through or at least invite us towards making a stance on some issues.
And I know from my participation over the couple decades, when there are issues that certain groups would like to join on an issue, they can. They have that freedom. Alliances can be formed.
Oftentimes, little subgroups may be spun off where a particular subgroup will take on an issue that they can kind of gravitate around.
Tell us from your perspective what some of the big problem areas are for current students that affect that religious groups have tried to respond to. People often think, of course, of binge drinking, those kind of things. But what do you see as some of the big issues?
you hit the nail on the head with that one in terms of binge drinking being huge, our religious community is able to come together, all of our traditions to come together and speak against that, and we have tried organizing some events to counter what happens on unofficial and some of the other particularly bad occasions for binge
drinking. Tell us what unofficial is.
I'm almost afraid to name it for fear we might add fuel to the fire.
Right.
Unofficial, as folk in the community know, means unofficial St. Patrick's Day. It is the day that for a number of years has been an excuse to go out and get drunk. And a large percentage of the students on the campus have a drink when they brush their teeth and just keep on drinking all day. And it's literally become a regional event. People, students come from other campuses across our state and some of our neighboring states to kind of celebrate unofficial St. Patrick's Day. Invariably, people get hurt or killed on that day as well, oftentimes through alcohol poisoning or various incidents that are somehow related to that binge drinking.
Now, Methodists used to have a reputation of being teetotalers, of not approving of any alcohol use. Has that changed?
Our official stance is that as a church and at any of our events, there will never be any alcohol. So if we do a wedding and we have a reception there at the church, there will not be any alcohol there. We discourage drinking, but we don't forbid it. We recognize that there are passages in the Bible where Jesus is drinking and changing water into wine. But officially we discourage it, and we very strongly discourage any form of binge drinking, can find some biblical precedent for that as well. But we do not have nearly as hard a stance as we once did on that issue.
What are some of the other issues facing college students today of concern to you as a campus minister?
Certainly, depression is rampant among our students, among our faculty, among a lot of our grad students. And I'm amazed how often that comes up in ministry. And we're constantly trying to find ways to help students identify that, help get them to appropriate means of treatment. But more importantly, hopefully helping to create an environment that's less conducive to that. Definitely the other organizations associated with the RWA are in agreement on that. We talk about that sometimes as we gather. That has to be a big issue. Sometimes related to that is the pace, the academic pace that is set here, and how often students' entire egos become wrapped up in their academic achievement. And at a university of this caliber, there are times when even very good students don't do well academically. And we try and help the students with that. We try and help identify that. The university is aware of that as well, and trying to create a healthy environment and healthy relationships with students to help avoid that.
What are some of the programs that Wesley Foundation provides for students to help them learn about depression or help them avoid it? I suppose being part of a community is a central part of that.
Absolutely. We create small accountability groups where we invite students to challenge each other on those issues, to ask each other, well, you know, how are you doing? You know, physically, how are you doing? Spiritually, emotionally, how are you doing? And we've found that happens best in a peer situation. As a leader of the church, sometimes they're intimidated to speak to me. So that's one way we combat it. Through our international ministry, I see that springing up all over the place. And with our international coffee house, I have an opportunity to interface with all kinds of people every week. And we oftentimes see it in the spouses and in the families in those situations. So we create programs, field trips, coffee houses, other opportunities for them to come together and be in relationship with each other.
Tell us about some of your programs for international students at Wesley.
Certainly. The heart of our international ministry is we do an international coffee house every Friday from 4 p.m. to 6 p.m. We have a coffee house that's connected with our facility called the Etcetera Coffee House, and that's where we run it. And it's just an informal time to get together. We break bread together, usually potato chips or Doritos or something like that. And then we drink coffee and we just talk. We bill it as an opportunity for internationals to practice their English, to make relationships with each other, with various faculty who sometimes attend, with church members. We teach about American culture. We learn about their cultures. I also have an international Bible study, which is designed to be a safe place for internationals to ask questions of faith. We aren't trying to push them towards a Christian faith, but instead just kind of create an easy environment for them to pose questions that they can't ask other places. We run field trips. This summer we do one each month. We did a horseback ride to Turkey Run. We have a 4th of July picnic coming up. We have a trip up to Gordyville to an antique show coming up. So activities like that.
When students come to the university and identify themselves to you, and that is what has to happen, right? There's no way that you know what Methodist students are coming to this campus. How do you first involve them, inform them about what's going on?
I wish I could say every one of our United Methodist churches sent us names of their United Methodist students who are coming here. Unfortunately, they are busy and oftentimes preoccupied with other things. So we try and get a handful of names from them. We try and do as much as we can on Quad Day, which is when all the various student organizations talk and have a chance to set up a booth. So we do that. We set up a table outside our facility to pass out information and just to greet people. But like many, if not most, religious groups or faith groups, most people find us through a peer. It's one student telling another student, hey, I had this great experience. I met these good people here.
We've been talking on Keeping the Faith this last hour with Reverend Rob Kirby, who is the campus minister at the Wesley Foundation, the United Methodist Church on campus and campus ministry, where he's the associate director of the foundation and the campus minister working with students and providing programs for students. He's also the current president for the second year in a row of the Religious Workers Association here at the University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign. My name is Steve Shoemaker. I'm the host for these programs, and I'm the director of another religious organization on this campus that's open to people of all faiths. It's very, at this point in its history, quite open to people of any religious tradition or of none, the University YMCA, where our Big Dump and Run sale is coming up this next August, and we'll be receiving things again from the community August 14 through 21st with the sale starting on Thursday, August 23rd, 24th, and Saturday till noon the 25th. Thank you for listening to Keeping the Faith.
You've been listening to Keeping the Faith, the production of WILL AM 580. The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of the participants.
When do we most need our leaders? In times of crisis? In times of war? I'm Jim Fleming. Next time on To the Best of Our Knowledge, Winston Churchill's biographer Martin Gilbert explains how the man who offered his nation only blood, sweat, toil, and tears made it believe that was enough. It's To the Best of Our Knowledge from PRI, Public Radio International.
To tonight at 7 here on WILL Urbana. AM 580 has a listener comment line. If you'd like to comment on something you hear on the Information Advantage, call 217-333-0853 and leave a message. That's 217-333-0853. Tonight in Champaign-Urbana, partly cloudy with a low in the upper 50s and light east winds. Tomorrow, sunny with a high in the lower 80s and southeast winds 5 to 10 miles per hour. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy with the low in the upper 50s and light southeast winds. And Tuesday, mostly sunny with a high in the mid-80s and light southwest winds. It's 6 p.m. This American Life is next.